Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The significance of Trump's unprovoked attack on Iran cannot be overestimated. It would seem we live in a world without rules. Also, why is the latest NATO summit an unmitigated embarrassment? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests. In Istanbul, we have Tariq Sirilmar. He is a historian and political commentator. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He is the deputy foreign editor at Komsomolskaya Pravda Daily. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Tariq in Istanbul. Of course, there's been an enormous amount of commentary about the so-called 12-day war. It was unprovoked. It was the United States and Israel working in unison, broke every single international law. Iran was not at war with either country. Certainly, the United States was not militarily threatened by Iran. Nonetheless, here we are. And I think it's enough. There isn't, hasn't been enough commentary about a very dangerous trend that we've been seeing over the last 20 years, spearheaded by the United States. There's a lot of talk about Iran leaving the non-proliferation treaty, shutting its doors to the IAEA, which makes perfect sense considering what has happened. But I would argue we have to go all the way back to the United States leaving arms control agreements, the OPCW, international conventions and organizations. What we saw from the end of the Second World War up until around the Bush Jr. administration is that the West, primarily the United States, wanted to control international organizations and conventions. Now they just simply want to destroy them. This is a different trend from control. Tariq.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right about that general trend. I would go one step further even. It's a point that has been made by some commentators already, which is that even during this prior period, where the United States, of course, was always a very violent and cynical and egotistical power, and where it tried to exert control over international institutions, it at least tried to achieve pretense. This was, for instance, still clear in the case of the first Gulf War, which, of course, was also an illegal war of aggression. And from the perspective of the Iraqis, you might well say, what difference did it make? But now we are in an even worse world because the United States has become very, very clear about simply not accepting any norms, any laws, or any rules, right? Talking about the famous rules-based international order that was always a sham. Let me put it like this. Spiegel, which used to be a decent investigative magazine in Germany and has become an Atlanticist rag, I can't put it any differently. Spiegel now has a cover showing Donald Trump, the president, in the uniform of a New York cop. And it says something like global cop, right? Now, first of all, this is, of course, idiotic and submissive. This is sort of the Reuters style of flattering the Americans. But the other thing is, what they don't understand is, it's not only a brutal cop, it's a lawless cop. So we have a global cop who doesn't accept any rules or any laws. That's the situation in which we are now, I believe.
Yeah, I would say in American parlance, a dirty cop. Okay.
Very dirty.
very much on the take. Okay. Yeah. Dima, of course, there's been an enormous amount of attention, rightfully so, on what happened during those so-called 12 days. I'm not really committed to the 12-day war. I don't think Donald Trump gets to name it. I think we will name it eventually. But, you know, watching this all unfold the weeks before, and I fell for it, I'll be honest with you. I thought there was some kind of negotiations going. I thought there was some kind of diplomacy going on. But it was all a sham. Now, up at what point in which Trump flipped? Did he go along with the script all along? Or did he change his mind? Was he convinced to drop the facade? We might know one day. But when I was watching this all happen, I was thinking, now, what are the Russians thinking? What are the Chinese thinking? Because as we have discussed many times on this program together, there is still that issue called the conflict in Ukraine. So if the United States is being deceitful and dishonest with the international community, and particularly with Iran. Why would any other country, major power, trust a word that comes from the Donald Trump and his administration? Dima?
I think there is an even more dangerous precedent. Why would any other countries which has the power to attack another country with impunity, or it seems to that big country that it can attack with impunity, why wouldn't they attack? Because what we saw, especially at this Hague, you know, the summit meeting of NATO in The Hague, we saw basically a classical appeasement of an aggressor. We had the president of a country which attacked another country without any pretext, you know, without any legal foundation. And, you know, the European leaders were heaping praise at the president of that country. They called him the peacemaker. You know,
I think they called him Daddy, but we'll talk about Daddy, that in the second part of the program.
Who brought the children, you know, the fighting children to heal, you know, to order. And you know, in 1938, at least they didn't praise Hitler. They said that, you know, we came out of a difficult situation. You know, Chamberlain said, I gave you so many years of peace, but no one praised Hitler. In The Hague, we had something much which is much worse, and I'm not here getting involved in propaganda, which propaganda trick which is called genetic memory. You know, when you take a situation from the past and just copy paste it to the current state of affairs. We had it so many times with Europeans comparing Russia to the Third Reich and President Putin to Hitler in 1938. And there are so many facts that speak against it. Like, there was no coup in Czechoslovakia. There were no foreign troops in Czechoslovakia threatening Germany.
In 1938, everybody, in 1938, right.
Exactly. But now it's a classical case, not only of appeasement, but of praising the aggressor, you know. They even talk about giving the aggressor the Nobel Peace Prize or something. Well, after Mr. Obama got it and after so many obnoxious people got it, I'm not surprised, but it should be a prize of shame now. I think people who got it before should get rid of it, not to be in the same company with someone.
Well,
like
I mean, since you already brought up the Hague, Tariq, you know, they were all together in one room. Why didn't somebody lock the doors and start the proceedings? Okay, start the tribunal, because not only did the United States involve itself in an unprovoked attack, you have all of its allies, which means they are complicit. Not only are they complicit in genocide, they're complicit in the destruction of the United Nations Charter. The word, one of the most important words right now, I'm looking at this, is precedent, because.
Yeah.
You know, what was the damage done? I'll let the punditry and the MAGA everybody can argue what the damage was done to Iran's nuclear assets. That's kind of immaterial at this point, because a precedent has been set. And you attack once with impunity. Why not attack again? Tariq, this is Donald Trump. He's got his forever war. He doesn't know it yet, but he's got it.
You know, and I would go beyond Iran. This is also true for Iran, what I'm going to say next, I believe. But look, we have 9 nuclear powers right now on the planet, I think. One of them is, of course, Israel, which is a total rogue power, absolutely no control, no international treaties, nothing, right? Israel can do it. We have 9. I bet with you in 5 to 10 years, we have 20 and upwards from there. Because the lesson that the U.S. has just taught everyone on the globe is you either have nukes or you are prey. You're on the menu. The only thing that will stop us is military deterrence. Now, some people argue you can achieve deterrence without nuclear weapons. Sometimes this may be true. But I think as a rule of thumb, I think we have to acknowledge in our world, the ultimate deterrence is nuclear weapons, unfortunately.
Well, Tariq, it gets to the point, well, why take a chance, just to agree with you?
Exactly. Absolutely. I think they have pushed nuclear proliferation forward massively. And I have to tell you, if I were a responsible leader in the global South and I had the capacity, I would try to acquire nuclear weapons. I would try to acquire nuclear deterrence because I don't want my population, including all the civilians, to be helpless against a West that is fine with genocide and perfectly fine with massive wars of aggression, even when they start during negotiations, right? It doesn't get more devious than that. So that's one outcome of this. The other thing I would like to say is, look, I have one last hope left. On one side, I agree with you, Peter. They have trashed and killed the UN Charter. They've trashed international law. They've trashed the UN 1948 Genocide Convention. This is all true. And these things are no longer life in the world as it is. They've murdered these things. The West has murdered these things. But they still exist, right? They still exist as a corpus of thought and documents. And my great hope would still be that we get into a transition where they will be picked up by others, for instance, by BRICS. Maybe the UN has to be bypassed. Maybe some other big institutions have to take up the UN Charter and save it from the UN and from the West. That well, might be one outcome.
I agree with you because we've seen the West do that. What legal standing does NATO have? It has none. It has no legal standing. It's not recognized by the United Nations Charter. But NATO is trying to become a parallel institution because NATO says yes. that it must have political and legal legitimacy. That's nonsense. That's propaganda. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very dangerous. Dima, Tariqa mentioned BRICS. I absolutely agree. I think the attack on Iran by the United States was an attack on BRICS directly.
You're absolutely right. And please look what happened in the end. You know, Israel and Iran, which were accused of religious fanaticism by so many, they managed to stop the fighting. So who is the real fanatic here? The Western ideologues, because they keep the fighting in Ukraine going through their puppet regime of Vladimir Zelensky, who is absolutely dependent on them. Financially, militarily, if they told him to stop, you know, they had a lot more clout with him than with the Ayatollah. So it's obvious for everyone. But they don't want him to stop the war. They want to continue the killing. So who is the true fanatic in today's world? It's not, these are not religious people. These are not people from emerging countries, emerging markets. These are not even tribal leaders. These are ideologues of ultra-liberalism who believe that their ideology is the best one, that it would be the best solution for the world to adopt it as soon as possible without resistance, which are hostile to traditional religions, both to Christianity and to Islam. And they use, what they do is they use the traditional phrases for attack. I mean, the phrase that is so commonly repeated in Iran, death to the United States, death to Israel, it dates from 1979. You know, it dates from the times of Ayatollah Khomeini.
Dima, I'm sorry, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Tariq, I want to go back to you. I think one of the most embarrassing spectacles of my life, at least in observing politics, was a NATO summit that was held at The Hague last week. There was a lot of deceit. There was a lot of lying. There was an enormous amount of propaganda. And it was embarrassing because we had the General Secretary of NATO referring to the President of the United States as daddy, which, you know, is kind of pathetic. And I think Mark Rutter will be remembered for all time for saying such a thing. But it says really what Europe is all about vis-a-vis the United States. The United States had just been involved in an unprovoked attack, massive attack on a non-nuclear country. Its ally in the region, Israel, another nuclear country, had been in a military conflict with Iran. And that was barely spoken about. And all they wanted to do was to give Donald Trump a tongue bath. What is that? How does that make the world a secure place? Tariq.
Well, obviously it doesn't, right? And the conceit or the delusion on the part of these NATO Europeans only works in big quotation marks in their minds because they've defined Russia as the problem, right? And so if you pretend that Russia is this enormous problem, then all you ever have to do is make sure that the United States stays in Europe so that it can help you against Russia. Right? That's the whole logic here. It's paranoid. It's not based on facts. It's evidence-free, but that's how this works. And everything else is dismissed and sidelined. And on top of it, the Europeans actually proactively join the U.S. and through the U.S., Israel as well, in their crimes, right? That's the price they're paying very willingly. Now, I would add one thing. One thing is we have the humiliation, the very, very open public self-humiliation, the saying of daddy. Also, the email that Reuters sent to Trump before the summit, even this.
Who would have thought there would be a NATO love letter? It's a historical artifact. Keep going.
But here's the substance. The substance, in a way, is even worse because they all agreed with very, very minor holdouts that they're going up to these famous 5%. So they hand Donald Trump a massive political victory at the cost of their own economies and populations. This will be very, very difficult and hard for them. And on top of it, you know what wasn't even discussed? And this was an American decision. The topic that was not discussed is how long are the Americans even going to stay in Europe? They didn't discuss it because the Americans didn't want to talk about it. So what the Europeans basically did was they said, we're going to pay much, much more. And you are not coming back with any sort of promise that you're buying by that because the Americans were unwilling to even talk about it. Now, don't get me wrong. I hope the Americans leave Europe. But from their perspective, it was complete submission in rhetoric, but also in substance, total sellout.
You know, and Dima, It's very convenient, I would say, for a politician in office today to make a promise that should be fulfilled in 10 years' time. I'm pretty sure no one at that summit will be in power in 10 years' time from now. That is part of the deceit. I do not believe under any circumstances are going to spend 5% of GDP on defense, even within 10 years. Because I don't want to forget it, Tariq has formulated it just perfectly, is that NATO has decided that the problem is Russia. But the real problem, Dima, is NATO. That's the problem.
Well, let me remind you that at this summit in The Hague and later at the EU summit in Brussels, they talked about a war with Russia. Not in 10 years, but earlier, you know. Mm. I think Boris Pistorius, the German defense minister, a few months ago said we should be prepared for war in 9 years, right? Some of them said even 3 or 5. So it is indeed insane. And I'm going to quote, they called Russia a threat, a direct threat. And they called China a systemic rival. If you look at the interests of European countries, this is a suicide because China has not done any harm to them. It only gave them cheap labor and super profits, you know, for European companies. But they still consider it a systemic rival. And in the end, they will make China angry and they can lose money. But they are prepared to do it. Why? Because they are ruled by an ideology. Ideology which does not give itself a name. I call it ultra-liberalism, but you may call it globalism, neoliberalism. This ideology views, divides the countries into democracies and autocracies. Any kind of lawless pressure or war is allowed against the autocracies. And you know what the result is? Even those countries of non-Western world, which are autocratic, this policy of the West preserves their autocratic regimes because it keeps them alert. You know, we know from history that the best way to change an autocratic regime is not a revolution or a foreign intervention. it's just letting it get old, you know, letting it age. Anatole France, the famous French writer, compared regimes to wines. You know, the old wines are usually softer and nicer than the what the French called opera young wines. So any regime gets older, and in this way, it gets kind of softer. But the West now doesn't let the so-called autocracies soften. It keeps them under constant pressure, making them not more liberal, but less liberal by that pressure, because this is the only way they can preserve their sovereignty and the only way they can stave off an attack. So in that sense, that summit in The Hague was very counterproductive.
If I were in the global South, Tariq, I would just say that this is just Western colonialism. It's like putting lipstick on a pig. I mean, they have their highfalutin language and all that. I mean, this summit was the background of this summit. What was going on is you had an illegal attack on Iran. You have Israel's behavior of impunity, and this is harking back to the 19th century. It is that they will define the parameters of the global order. You know, I'm not against great power competition, but great power competition with rules. We have it without rules. Go ahead, Tariq.
Look, I mean, I have one thing I would like to add about why this is happening. I agree. I agree that this is partly driven by ideology, absolutely. But I think there's also a very specific context or process in which European political elites have been captured. I really believe blackmail, bribery, careers, everything is in play to create elites that are no longer standing in, either for national interests in Europe, that's one level, or for interests of Europe as a whole. Our elites
That is done through NATO. That is the institution mediates all of this elite capture.
And that partly goes back to what you asked about, namely, how does this look from the global South? And I think what the global South sees, among other things, is paradoxically that the West is united. And we in the West may think, oh, that's great, we are united, but it's not great, because they see us united under the worst possible leadership of the United States, and they see us united around a horrible agenda, and they see us united in legal nihilism. That's what they're seeing. We are all the same, and we are horrible together. If the Europeans instead were balancing against the US, even if they were still in a strong relationship, but if they were telling the world, we don't agree with this or that the Americans are doing, it would produce a different image of the West immediately, right? But what we now have is a West that's united in alienating everybody else.
You know, Dima, Russia took particular note of the behavior of particularly the United States, but also Israel in the drumbeat against this illegal conflict against Iran. That doesn't bode well for, number one, U.S.-Russia relations, which I do not think ultimately will be reset. There's too much suspicion and distrust, a great deal of it coming from recent events here. But in resolving the Ukraine conflict, The U.S. Has shown its cards. It will back the spider web type operations. They're not interested in negotiations, even though the Western mantra, the media, is the Russians don't want to negotiate. That's absolutely untrue. We saw at this NATO summit there. Did they say the word peace once? I don't think so. I don't think so. Dima.
You're absolutely right. I think that basically we saw between Iran and Israel that it is possible to negotiate while the war is going on. So their absolute demand of truce, which formally comes from Zelensky, but in reality, of course, from the West, it's hypocritical. Tariq is absolutely right. The West is united under the worst possible slogans. So this so-called special military operation which Russia is conducting in Ukraine is anti-colonial. You know, one of the reasons why Russia could not provide more help to Iran is that Russia has its hands tied up in Ukraine. And more people in Global South understand it. And in this way, we're getting more united. I saw it during the St. Petersburg Economic Forum, which I attended last week. I saw a lot more unity from the global South than before. I agree with Tariq, you know, the only way we can see some rationale in the actions of the West is that these are ideological states. I mean, look who gets punished. You know, the American politicians lost so many people, so much money in Iraq. No one is punished. Mm-hmm. Who is punished? Someone who called the Russian ambassador, you know, like Michael Flynn, someone who said that Putin might be right, someone in Europe who could just imagine writing an article that peace between Russia and the West and Europe is possible and Putin might be one of the best options for the West. You know, Putin is being diplomatic. He still had good words about Trump, even though his prediction that Europeans would twist their tails around Trump came true. You know, a lot of people did not believe it because these European leaders insulted Trump so much. But Putin had his point.
In closing, I agree with you both. And it's interesting how Munich is always brought up. It's another Munich. Well, it is in a sense, is because They use Munich as a reason not to negotiate. You don't have a legitimate part. They delegitimize disagreement. They delegitimize negotiation and diplomacy. And that is a very pathetic point to end this program. I want to thank my guests in Moscow and in Istanbul. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.